Welcome to From the Heart with me, Dawn Lister, and today's guest, Prune Harris. Prune, welcome to From the Heart. It's lovely to have you here as my guest. Prune is an energy expert and soul activist. We are speaking to her today about her first book, and she is based in the UK and lives in a beautiful place called Cornwall. So welcome, Prune. Lovely to have you here. How are you?
I'm really great today. Thanks, Dawn, and thanks for inviting me. I'm excited to share this time with you and all of your listeners.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for being I guess on the podcast and taking the time out to chat to us. So let's dive straight in because I've got a million questions. First of all, tell us in brief, just in a few sentences, about your book. Let's start there.
Okay, so my book is Your Radiant Soul, Understand Your Energy to Transform Your World. Because your energy systems are the foundation of your health, the foundation of not just your physical, but your emotional and soul or connective health as well. And I've been able to see energy since I was born, and I've trained in many different modalities that have kind of furthered my understanding of energy, furthered the capacity to express it or use the language around it, because we're all born understanding energy. It's our natural way. But we don't really have those conversations. We don't have the linguistics around energy structures. You may be really well versed in the fact that you have a circulation system and a respiratory system and a cardiovascular system, but you might not know that you have a system of the heart field or the chakras or the meridians or many other energetic structures. So, in my book, we explore the different understandings of energy anatomy, but also why it's so relevant to bring those understandings forward in our life. How, when we understand our energy and we're able to bring in those gentle but powerful tweaks on a kind of regular basis, just like we would brush our hair or clean our teeth or make sure that we were eating or sleeping pretty well, we understand how to care for our physical body. So in the book, I really go through how to care for your energy body and why it's so essential for not just daily life, but living your most magnificent life, being here in your full radiant soul energy.
Oh, thank you. That's a wonderful description. And I would say it's a really easy to follow book, actually. It's really easy to dip in and out of. It's not something you have to sit down and read the whole thing. So well put together in the various different sections. And I love the fact that you've got practices at the end of each section. So there's something practical to take away that you can really use for yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Dawn. I wanted it to be a book that, because I love that you say it's easy to access. You may have noticed that the font was quite large. And I did that intentionally because, I'm 50, and I reckon a lot of our audience are in that age group where eyes are maybe not quite what they were in their 20s or 30s. And I find personally now, I spend so much time on a computer for my work, for writing, for course creation, all of those things, that when I actually have time to think, oh, what do I fancy? I'm going to read a book. My eyes are tired. And so many of these prints are so small. So we chose print that was not only larger in its size, but also easy for the neurodiverse people to read, because then the neurodiverse amongst us are increasing all the time. So people with dyslexia, dysgraphia, all of those amazingly different ways that the brain is wired. So yeah, I wanted it to be something that was more like a reference book as well as an easy read. So I'm delighted for that feedback. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it is. It's really lovely. And I hadn't really thought about the print being larger, but you're right, it is. I know you've mentioned it. I'm obviously 53 now, and I can't read anything without my specs. They go everywhere with me. Blind. Thank God for spectacles.
Exactly.
So let's dive in. First thing I wanted to ask you is you speak about being a soul activist and you speak about the soul in your book. I mean, that's going to mean lots of different things to different people. I have my thoughts around what the soul may or may not be. Can you speak a little bit about what it is you mean when you speak about soul?
Yeah, I think it's really, really simple. Obviously, we can go into theological or cosmological understandings that would take far more than this hour that we have to explore what the soul is. But let me put it in its most simple understanding that I have around the energy of the soul. And that is that it is your most essential energy. It is literally the essence of you. And I think across most traditions, whether you're looking at modern or ancient, that definition of the soul could definitely be housed, yeah, no matter what your individual cosmology is. So your most essential energy, your deepest essence. And because of that, it resides right in the very core, the energetic core. For many of your yoga listeners, you'd know it as the Sushumna Nadi. For many of your listeners who are trained in Chinese understandings or Tai Chi or Qigong, it would be the Daiji pole. Those are the energetic structures that we have from above our head to below our feet, right in that narrow channel of the central core. So think of the width of your spine and then go out a little bit more either side, right through the center of your body to below your feet. That's where that most essential energy is housed. But it doesn't just stay there. From that place, from that amazing center of yourself that's connected into the cosmos above, the ground beneath your feet, and is essentially you, from that place, that soul energy then radiates out through every single thing that you are. So your body is in that soul energy and of that soul energy. All of your thoughts, your emotions, your consciousness, they are imbued with that immense soul wisdom, because that core soul energy radiates out right to the very, very edge of your biofield, your aura, and is everything you are is shaped by the resonance, the pulse, the vibration, the messages, the information that's housed in that soul energy.
Oh, thank you. That's a wonderful description. I know, for, as you said at the beginning, you know, there's the theological. When someone says the word soul, I immediately think about this thing that's separate from yourself. That, not that I would say this is what it is, but that's what it conjures in my mind. It's within you. And then when our physical body dies, it goes off somewhere else. And for me, I have a belief in karma and that we reincarnate. So I feel like that part of my energy leaves, you know, doesn't necessarily leave the body, but kind of merges with everything around me and then reforms into something else. But listening to what you were saying about how the soul expands through the body into the biosphere, is that the word you used?
Biofield, but biosphere would be great as well.
Yes. Would you say then that the experiences that we have around us have an impact on that, or does that always stay the same?
What a brilliant question, Dawn. Everything we are is energy, even our physical matter. Yeah. Einstein told us this a few decades ago. The ancients have been telling it for far longer than we have any written records of. So everything we are is energy. We're in continual energetic exchange with everything around us. So that means that our soul energy radiating out through our body isn't look at the science, the mysticism, our daily experiencing, that it's a myth. We aren't separated in any way. So our energy is designed to connect not only into everything that's directly around us, let's say the energy in this room or this plant that I'm sitting near, or when I go for a walk, our energy connects in with the trees and the trees' energy connects with us. But it's designed to be sourced continually and to share information. So we can think of ourselves as an amazing dynamic energy exchange with the world around us. And it's not just close proximity. I mean, how many times, Dawn, I know it's happened to you and I know it's happened to everybody. Have you maybe thought about someone and then the phone rings or you get a text from them? Or you think, somebody tells you about a book and you go into a charity shop and wow, that book is right there on the shelf. Like, how does that happen? When we think about synchronicity, when we think about manifestation, for me, that's simply exchange of energy information. So we can think of ourselves as this amazing matrix of energy, right from the deepest internal matrix, that soul energy, to this web of our aura that carries information in and out. But we're just one amazing, unique, and magnificent matrix inside a much greater matrix, and that information exchange can happen through that entire matrix field.
So thank you. Yeah, I really resonate with that explanation. I kind of really sense that being part of the larger matrix. And I think, but I would say that sometimes I feel more connected and aware of it. Maybe I'm always, well, I am always connected to it, but I'm more aware of it and in tune with it at some moments. And then at other moments, you feel less connected. And I guess that's what I was wondering, is like, do you feel that our energy, maybe does it shrink if something difficult is happening to protect us? Does the structure of the energy change in some way? You know, for instance, at the minute, we're witnessing all this stuff that's happening in the Middle East. I find that very distressing. And I can feel my heart tighten. And I can feel I feel a lot of physical symptoms, you know, respiration changes, I get headaches, I feel very distressed, and then my protection mechanisms come in. So something in my energy system is clearly changing in response to what I'm witnessing. But I guess on what I believe is that my soul level stays the same because it can't change. But my energy in response to what's happening around me changes. Would you say that's what you've witnessed?
Yeah, I would say that's exactly it, isn't it? That's that place that through your work, through your yoga practice, through your meditation practice, we all are working to keep that kind of equilibrium and responsiveness within our energy field so that we can witness something that is deeply painful. We can experience something that's deeply painful and honor it for the process of that, and at the same time, hold or quickly return to our energetic flow and balance. And that shows up, of course, in our energetic flow and balance in our life. So we have two kind of, let's say, vibrations through your entire energy fields. One, we can equate with the fight, flight, and freeze, or the sympathetic nervous system, yeah? And that one is the habitual energy field, and it's reactive. It works deeply from the subconscious, all of those programs and patterns that we grew up in. Most of them, if we're still experiencing them, are ones that limit us. So when we are in that habitual energy field, fight, flight, freeze, sympathetic, then our energy system is not able to flow in its biggest form and balance. So at that point, you're exactly like you say, your amazing soul energy is still billions of supercharged filaments of light and information at your core, and it's still radiating through your energy system. But now, let's say that you have exactly the situation that you talked about. You're witnessing pain, grief, death. You feel that huge confusion of, surely there's another way. Surely, as human beings at this point in creation, we can find a way to live together harmoniously. All of those places of kind of soul longing. Our souls know a truth that's far bigger than the horrors that many people are experiencing in their daily life right now. Mm-hmm. So that deep longing can collapse or crash the heart field resilience counter, exactly like you say. Mm-hmm. We feel the grief, we feel the pain, And this may be relevant to someone in their personal life situation, or like you say, a global situation or an environmental situation. You know, the level of grief, care, fatigue about our climate crises is moving through all of our systems, whether we're conscious of it or not. So that place of the heart field, this amazing electromagnetic energy field that's measurable by our modern science, it in its form of health and vitality, it radiates at least 3 foot off your body. So if you were to extend your arms right out, that's about how big your amazing, dense, pulsing, vibrating heart field holds you. For some people, let's say you're watching an amazing sunrise or sunset, or you're thinking about someone or something that brings you such immense joy, that heart field will expand considerably. So it could be now that your amazing thick electromagnetic heart field is more like 2 arms lengths, 6, 7, 8 foot off your body system. But when it collapses, when it kind of impacts back into your body system because of that heart grief, heart pain, confusion, distress, anxiety, when that collapses in, it means that your entire electromagnetic energy of the body loses its resonance. And that's exactly what you're talking to, isn't it, Dawn? Where you just, everything closes in on you. Your heart field is like the amazing conductor of the entire orchestra of every organ, every energy system, possibly with the exception of the soul, but it works very close with that soul energy to radiate out in the same way. So when the heart system collapses, and I don't mean in a fundamental way that can never be recovered, I've never seen any part of your energy system that can't heal, but when you feel that drop, that lessening, that tightening, that's what's happening energetically. And there are many, even in that, can I share a tiny practice that we can do right in that instance? So you're watching something that's really hurting your heart, or you're thinking about or experiencing some kind of heart pain or loss because of things that are going on in your life. So if you were just to take your fingers and cross your arms over and place your fingers into your armpits. So you're just essentially giving yourself a hug across your heart field. What you're doing energetically is you're bringing in the foundational lemniscate pattern, that figure eight or infinity pattern. In essence, we're making a big figure eight with our arms here across the very center of the chest, which is the place where the heart energy and the soul energy most vibrate together. And we're also helping support two of our amazing energy channels, these meridians that work with the heart energy and the heart protector energy, the pericardium, which is an incredible sac that guards and protects your heart organ. And if you can just hold that place of heart hug, and for some, it's even more effective just to bring in a tiny rock, a tiny sway. Every one of your capillaries works with a rhythm of your heartbeat. And anytime you bring a rhythm into the body motion, then it can quite quickly stabilize and invite that heart field back into its more cohesive flow. So 3, 4 breaths here. And then relaxing. You can just relax your hands. Just that simple practice can reestablish the heart field. And when we do these simple practices regularly, let's say we do them every time. Let's say you're about to watch the news and you think, I know what's coming. You never see good news on the news, do you? I know what's coming. Okay, I'm going to sit here. First of all, I'm just going to do an amazing movement up the central meridian from the pubic bone up to the chin. I'm helping my chakras come into alignment. I'm helping my heart field. I'm helping that energetic core. And then as I watch the news, I'm going to sit there with my doing the heart hug doesn't mean that you don't feel or experience that connectivity, that collective consciousness of grief or pain, but it means that your own system doesn't collapse amidst it. Because in a way, for me, it feels like one of our biggest callings, one of our biggest invitations right now is to hold our courage, to bring hope forward in the world. And anything that we can do to nurture that hope, to inspire or nurture that courage, that feels definitely for me the work of now. Because if I can watch that news and if I can still feel compassion and if I can still feel like I am empowered in my own vibration to be part of a change, if whatever I do in the world, whether that's tend to a garden, whether that's tend to other people, whether that's write books like I'm doing and teach courses, whether whatever it is, if we can show up in a way that aids that vibration of compassion, of connection, of understanding, brings healing into the world, then wow, we are living every one of our soul needs.
Oh, thank you. That's so interesting and relevant, actually. And interestingly, that's how I sleep.
Yeah.
I sleep with my hands. So if you're listening and you've not got this on YouTube, just you can go to YouTube and the video will be up so you can see Prune doing her practices. But she had her hands tucked under her armpits. I sleep very similarly with one hand, my right hand under my left armpit and my left hand on my shoulder and on my left side. And I've slept like that for quite a while. Instinctively, I felt like I needed to hold myself so that I could drop off. And so it's an actual thing. It's a practice.
Well, this is so fabulous, isn't it, Dawn? I don't think I've ever taught to a class or whatever without someone saying, I do that naturally, because we are energy beings and we know how to look after our own energy. We know it. It's instinctive to us. And now what's really beautiful about what you were doing, one hand in the armpit, one hand on the deltoid of the opposite arm, that is a really deep connector for two specific things, heart and kidney. And kidney is all about that courage energy.
Wow.
It's all about courage. So you're feeding. It's all also that kidney energy is a lot about the mother energy. Yeah, the kidney energy is some of the deepest energy in our system. It's the deepest yin energy that we have. So it's this kind of source energy, mother energy. So you're connecting a very powerful kidney center with a heart center, nourishing those deep yins in order to rebalance, bring out joy, bring out determination, passion, really source yourself. That's gorgeous. And also anything that comes across these arm creases or leg creases, help connect that energetic core, help the energetic core and the radiant soul move through more of the body system. So yeah, beautiful. We are all so wise when it comes to our energy.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, I think, as you say, this individualism is a new thing. And in our, I feel anyway, in our energy system, there's a wise knowing, but we're quite often just really far disconnected from it because society has no interest in us being wise. Or say society, that's perhaps the wrong word, capitalism. Capitalism and government have no interest in us being wise and empowered and intuitive. They have interest in us feeling small and like we're lacking and that we don't know and we need to purchase something so we feel better. And actually that's not the case. So you spoke about, you know, the heart collapsing in, you know, and the need for courage. And I really, really agree with that. And that is a word that I would use. I've been saying quite a lot recently, I want to be able to keep my heart open. So I'm witnessing a lot of trauma. We all are in the world. I know a lot of people are now turning off. They don't want to look. I can understand entirely why they're doing that. I don't think it's helpful. because ignorance is not bliss and it leads to more trauma. And when we think about it, if we work from a heart connection, we would come to a place where we could communicate and find common interests and common beliefs, because in all faiths there are common beliefs. And yet what we're seeing playing out, certainly in the Middle East, and that's just one part, this will be playing out all over the world in different ways, is this belief of separateness and I'm right and you're wrong, and a sense of ownership, whether it be of land or people or goods or whatever it happens to be. And it's really hard to keep your heart open when you're witnessing cruelty and violence, because I think those things, they have a mark on your energy systems, don't they? So I'm curious about something. We're kind of going off tack slightly, but you say you see energy, and you always have, which is fascinating. I think we all, I don't know what you think, I think we all have an awareness of energy one way or another. I would say I have a knowing. So I have a feeling, a sense around my energy and other people's energy. You see it. What I feel when I feel somebody's energy change is a constriction or a hardening or a withdrawal. So you, and I've, it's taken me a long time, but I've learned to believe that when I see it, I feel it. So you physically see that. Can you say a little bit about what that's like for you?
Yeah, I definitely can do, but I kind of want to go back first on to what you were just talking about, because I think it's really important. A couple of points I want to pick up there. We're really at a pivot point, aren't we, in a change of consciousness. So we can talk about the governments, we can talk about the vested interests, the financial systems, we can talk about the legacy of the patriarchy, we can talk about the legacy of scientific autonomy removing us from that deep wild wisdom of ourselves. We can look back at this point now and say, oh, there's been a few things in these last few hundred years that really aren't working. Maybe we could go back 2,000 years. We say, there's a few things that really aren't working. What do we choose to do? And for me, it's that place of choice. And that choice has to start with ourselves. So in that instance, you said of some people who are saying, actually, I'm going to give myself a break from the news and I'm not going to watch the news, or I'm not going to read it. For me, the primary understanding is that you need to be, if each one of us can be in our biggest vibration of balance, that's when we're empowered to make the choices across all places in our daily life and in the world. We can be empowered. Now, you're right, that's not the story that we're told. We're continually, the mainstream narrative is one of disempowerment, of not quite being worthy enough, of needing to defer to other people's opinions. So how do we inform ourselves? I did agree with you, information is so important. How do we inform ourselves in ways that we can still meet and express and experience our biggest healthy vibration? And so much of that depends on how much we're willing to show up in our own lives, doesn't it? So if I've got a lot of limiting patterns that I'm not able to help move through, or I'm avoiding completely, yeah, it's always his fault, it's always her fault, my bosses are always nightmares, yeah, if there's any always in my life, then that always becomes a limiting pattern, and it's my pattern. So then I have to take responsibility. I'm invited to take responsibility to help that pattern shift, so that we can think about our individual energy. We can think about the collective energy. If I'm changing my vibration into one of balance, if I'm willing to engage in discussion, compassion, forgiveness work with someone that I'm in conflict with, then that vibration resonates into that greater matrix that we were talking about. So I feel like every single one of us is deeply empowered to change what's happening in our world. So if I've watched the news, I'm watching it or I'm reading it. I tend to read rather than watch. That's my way. I read it in the morning. And then I put that information down and I go to my altar. And I do my prayer work and I do my forgiveness work. And maybe I dance, maybe I do a dance for joy. for peace, for celebration, for the unity, for wisdom, for consciousness. I know that in doing my own work, I'm changing that vibration in the world. And I think that's the place, reclaiming that sort of concept of us as sacred beings, deeply powerful, as well as fabulous, lusty, messy human beings and everything in between. That's that place of kind of energetic. That's the truth that resonates through our energy system. These three continual interweavings of vibration between the physical, the consciousness mind, and the sacred. So that's the place where I feel we can move more and more gracefully, more and more wisely, because I dead agree with you. Every one of us has that immense wild wisdom that is creeping, singing, roaring, dancing, always in us. And we simply need to connect with it more and invite it more into our life. So having said all of that, how I see energy, since I was born, always been able to. So in a way, Dawn, it was a growing understanding for me that people didn't see the world exactly as I did, because it's our norm, isn't it? However you see the world right now, and especially as you were growing up, you think that everybody sees it like that. So I grew up in a farming family, big family. I was the youngest. Some people could think I was forgotten a lot of the time. Other people could think that I had a lot of space and time with the land, with the animals. And I really feel like that capacity, I was a very joyful, confident child, very loved in my own family, and with a lot of freedom. And it feels like I never lost what all children have, which is that ability to perceive energy, exactly like you say, for some people. So I see energy, which would be called clairvoyance, clear seeing, not necessarily seeing the future, which is how we tend to use clairvoyance now, but clear seeing. Or you were saying you just get that sense of knowing. That's claircognizance, the way that your mind just knows things. You're tapped into that energy, of course, we all are. And the way that you most perceive it is through that mind field. But also you, through your languaging, obviously you're very clairsentient. Your body also experiences things. You have that wisdom of communication of energy through your body system. When you were describing how it was when your heart field collapsed, that's very physical for you. Mm-hmm. So lots of people being clairsentient. And then there's also clairalliance, clairgustance, clairaudience, when people hear things or taste things or smell things. Many, many people can smell or taste cancer, especially.
It's I can smell when someone is horrible. It's not a nice thing, but I can smell when somebody's getting ill.
Yeah.
Or I have different illnesses, and I can smell when someone's very close to death.
Yeah.
Before other people can smell it. It's weird.
Yeah. So it's weird, but it's also utterly natural. About, let's just kind of put it into a broader context. You think about how dogs, who are energy beings just as we are, can smell electrical change, which will indicate an epileptic fit coming or a seizure coming.
Wow. You know?
So those dogs are now in many, many homes with people who have seizures, because the dog can alert the individual. That individual then can be in a comfortable position, call for help, know that the seizure is coming. Now, what I would like to say is, what if that dog can alert that person, and that person can do some practices to help their electromagnetic fields come more into balance? I'm not saying it would stop every seizure, but it would stop many, many of them. So there's so much that we can learn and experience. So that form is clairalliance, that clear smelling. So all of our senses are involved in energy perception, just as they're involved in our real world or physical world perception. Yeah, all of it's the same. So absolutely, for me, my clairgustance, my sense of taste perception is less than the rest of them, but the rest of them are all pretty high. I have a form of synesthesia, which means that my senses kind of don't quite work in the way that other people's senses. So if I go to a concert and I'm watching musicians play, then I see the vibration of the music in colors, in waves, in fields. I see the energy systems moving in waves and fields as they're playing those amazing instruments. I can see the energy of the energy channels, part of your energetic structure. So that's your meridians and how they flow and move like little rivers in your body system. I can see where those rivers have congestion or areas that are kind of gappy or depleted. Yeah, pretty much all of the systems of energy that you have and that we have around us, I see is kind of simply as I'm seeing your skin. And one thing I should say, a lot of people get a little bit freaked out or scared by that. Say, oh my God, like, what can she see about me?
I was thinking, oh my God, can you see where I'm blocked?
Well, yes, but in a way, that's kind of irrelevant. What I would say is that even I've worked in private practice for 20 years. I no longer am working in private practice because I'm teaching and speaking and writing a lot now. But for in those 20 years, I've worked with people who have had immense traumas, have had illnesses that took them to the brink of death. I've worked with many people who have died, helped them prepare for that death that they wanted, worked with hundreds of women in pregnancy and birth. So I've worked with very broad spectrum of people. And what I would say is I've never, and I'm including even all of the millions of people that we see on TV, which I can see energy just as easily on the screen as in person, or that I walk past in the street or I sit with in buses or whatever. So in my life, there's a lot of people. I've never seen an energy system, by that I mean a person, that is not in its balance less than about 90%. So that's a bit of a convoluted way of saying that. Every person I've ever seen is almost in their biggest health, their biggest balance, their biggest wellness. And this is something that is utterly against the mainstream story, isn't it? We think, oh my goodness, I've got cancer. That's potentially fatal. And that whole system. But actually, even some of the most extreme forms of cancer, 90% of your energy system, 90% of your body is still in its connective and cohesive magnificence. It's just that 10% of patterns that have got a little bit glitchy, that are holding imbalance in ill health. So I really want to say that because it's a radical rethinking of our relationship with our body and health and disease. All physical imbalance, all physical ailments, illnesses are a result of an energetic imbalance. When we can work with the energy, we work so much quicker than if we just try and work with the physicality. And of course, we work with whole system. Yeah. So I said a lot then, Dawn. Come back with anything that comes up for you.
Gosh, I've got a list. That was just really interesting. As the listeners will know, I'm a cranial sacral therapist, and we work very much on that model that the system is at health. And I guess when you speak about the soul, I would speak about that sense of me connecting with life force via the CSF fluids. And that's what we feel, is that people are underneath the noise. They're imperfect. There's a perfect state of health, and we're orientating them back to that. However, that said, the world around them that we are existing in sometimes makes it really difficult for you to break some of those patterns that will help you to access your health. And I think that when I listen to everything that you're saying, and, you know, the many people I've had the privilege to speak to, I would agree that, you know, at our essence, at our soul level, we are, you know, we're perfect energy beings. We've moved very far away from that in our heads, You don't necessarily believe it. We can't always tap into it because we might attach ourselves to the belief about a truth that's happened. Someone's hurt me. This, you know, I'm in poverty. Because they are truth. Someone might have hurt you. You might be in poverty. Let's say those things are true. And that will have a direct impact on your experience. And that can make it really, really difficult to access the that those inner potentials that we have. And I'm being convoluted now, but I think what I'm asking you is, with that in mind, knowing that we have these potentials inside us, do you believe that we work, you know, with this matrix of energy around us? Some people would call it the universe. Do you believe that, you know, we together are co-creating what's happening in our worlds? What's your thought around that? Because I have a slight problem when people say to me, the universe has given me this, or the universe is offering me this. And I think, well, no, that takes away your personal responsibility. And I'm a strong believer that we do have a personal responsibility to how we show up for ourselves and where we put our energy. And that aside, is also not our fault if we're born in a place or a part of the world or in a certain family that makes that a lot harder. And I don't believe, despite the fact that I believe in reincarnation, that that's karmic necessarily. I think it's just luck. But that's just my point of view. What's your thoughts on that?
So just a small question then.
sorry. No, I'm listening to you. I'm thinking, I think you might have an interesting viewpoint.
Yeah, I love it. For me, I feel that we are here in our amazing radiant soul forms, and that as such, we are part of the world soul. Now, when I say world soul, I'm not just meaning this amazing planet that we call home. I'm talking more about that universal or cosmic soul. So here's me. I'm this amazing vibration, and I'm part of another amazing vibration. Now, I happen to be contained in this form and connective in every way. That tree happens to be contained in its form and connective in every way. The tree has an energetic imprint. So does the animals. So does all of the natural world. Every human does. So together, we are emitting a vibration which impacts that collective soul, because we're part of it, that world soul. We are part of it just as we are individual souls. So as far as are we co-creating together, I can't see it being any other way. So every action that I make, I can make from the place of small consciousness, individuality. We could say from the place of ego, yeah? Or I can make it from that place of understanding my responsibility and sourcing from something bigger than myself. So we have a fairly okay awareness nowadays in our wisdom sharing of the First Nations or Native American concept of making decisions based on how those actions will affect seven generations down the line.
Yeah.
That's co-creation.
Mm.
That's co-creation on many different levels. That's understanding our sense of responsibility instead of just feeling precious about our rights.
Mm.
So for me, that's one of the dances. And also I worked with the First Nations elders of the Mi'kmaq Nation in Eastern Canada for 7 years. And I was astounded when I learned that when they talk about seven generations, they don't mean what I was thinking of in seven generations, which is me, my mum, or my son, his child, yeah? For them, a generation is the living memory. So if great-great-grandma is alive as little Jimmy, that is one generation. So now let's time that by seven. You're not talking about 300 years, you're talking about 1,000 plus years. So we've got this amazing we've been reduced and reduced and reduced in our kind of concept of responsibility and collective empowerment. And now is the time that we begin to claim it back more. So the only other thing I want to pick up on that place, Dawn, is I don't feel it's luck where we're born into. You know, there's the politics of geography is mind-blowing, isn't it? The like you say, almost seemingly flip of a coin. I live here in Cornwall right now. I have a son, a daughter, a husband. My house is not being bombed. My men in my family are not behind front lines. That is the politics of geography. And every day I give thanks for the fact that I'm living in safety. I'm living where I can get support. I can afford to eat. So that for me, let's never get complacent about the immense gifts that we have in our life. Now, conversely, we know through the happiness measurements, research scales, that some of the happiest people live lives that we here in the West might feel are utterly unhappy. They live with next to no possessions. So these kind of qualities of what makes an expansive life, what are we here to do? What is our soul purpose? What's our life purpose and how do they meet? So that place of where we're born, for me, my sense of it is that we are born into the circumstance that our soul needs for its fullest potential of completion, for its fullest potential of healing. And as we go through our day, through our life, through our years, towards our death, that actually our soul is in its trajectory, and we get choices every second of every day as to whether we engage in that potential, whether we grow in the way that our soul expression is most calling for. And the times we don't, the times that we get stuck in those patterns, the times we fall back into reactivity, that's okay. That's all part of that soul's lesson, that soul's growth, until we get to the point of death, wherever that is in the years of our life. We get to that point of death and our soul has experienced what it came here to experience. So then when you talk of reincarnation, we get returned on that soul level into the world soul, while our matter, our physicality, gets returned into the physicality of the world, yeah? And then from that place of world soul, at some point, if we work with the concept of reincarnation, we again form into a individualized soul and are born into a circumstance. Some could even say we choose the circumstance. So we're born in order to fulfill that soul's experiencing again. That's where I am currently in my kind of feelings and thoughts about that. And so one of the things we haven't really talked about is that each soul has its own unique vibration, and that shows up as a color. I can see it as a color. People can sense it as colors in different ways, because that soul color is simply the predominant vibration of that soul, of that human being. And those soul colors have families. So some people will be very relaxed and aware of the concept of soul families. But for me, those soul colors often designate a lot about how that person is going to experience their life. The things that they're going to just find so easy, the things they're going to be really challenged with, the things that their soul color, that their soul in its fullness is here to transmute or heal or blow open to a whole different level.
I really get that. And isn't it, I think outside of our immediate family, there's also the soul family of the people, the community we end up being with. And sometimes it's like really intense, but for a short period of time. And then other times it's like a long connection that goes on. And that absolutely, I mean, for me, and when I visualize reincarnation, I agree with everything, pretty much, not all, but everything that you're saying. I don't know. I think it's a more complicated conversation that we don't have time for. So maybe we'll have to come back and do it again. But yeah, we, you know, the people that we come into, that come into our life is astonishing. And they feel like they're part of your vibration. They feel like, for me, some of my friends, and I know a lot of people have a few close friends, they feel more like family than family. Because as you progress through life and you become more evolved in your energetic field, you're going to attract different people, 100%. And they'll be, it's like a magnet, you're pulled towards each other, aren't they? We haven't got a huge amount of time, so I really wanted to talk to you about, I'm just opening your book so I can pull up I just want to read some of the titles of your chapters or your sections so that people can get a sense of, like, this has really interested me and I want to go back and kind of read it in more fullness again and make notes. One of your chapters was, you are resilient, and you speak about the collective crisis and then the gift of belonging and how kind can you be, which felt really important for where we are in the world right now, and your wild wisdom and the imaginal cell, a bedtime story. There's so many, and that was the other one, it's on the other page, living your big life. And I just wanted to speak to you about that. Like, what do you mean by that? Living your big life. You know, some of these, they really pull you in, these headings, and make me, and you know, what's your wild wisdom? Can you just speak a little bit to that? You know, how would someone know what their big life is?
Yeah. I know. I thank you for the first. No one's ever picked up the chapter titles before, but for me, they were really, every chapter was like the container of the essence of what I wanted to bring forward and what came forward for that chapter. It was such a beautiful experience writing. So your big life, I had to really sit with that and hesitate around it, because you mentioned early on in this chat how our mainstream story essentially lets us know that we're not good enough unless we buy something to make ourselves better. Yeah, that is the absolute driving force of most of our media. And so when I talk about living your big life, sometimes I see people's energy system drop when I say those words, because they immediately feel, I'm not. I'm never going to be that influencer or that celebrity. I'm never going to be rich, even if I want to be. I have horrible relationships. So it's easy to concentrate on the stories that we're being shown as a big life. By me, what I mean by that is that you are living your magnificent life, that you are living the fullest version of yourself that you can be at that moment, knowing that you're always developing, that every part of your energy system is in service, literally in service to you being more and more and more you every second of every day. That's what I mean by living our big life. And we all go through times when we just simply know that is not true, that we are living our small lives. We are living the to-do lists. We're living the desperately trying to pay the bills. We're living the, oh, I really don't know if I can get through this habit that I'm really, really being confronted with. Whatever those small limiting patterns are. And remember, they feel so big. Like, I can think of years when I've crashed my head against the same limiting pattern in my life again and again, because I just wasn't in a position of consciousness to be able to think, oh, I'm kind of ready to evolve this right now. Yeah. So it's always about growth periods for us, isn't it? And we know that so often those big growth periods come when things kind of feel the grimmest, the most hard. We understand that we have the capacity to transmute or transform that situation for ourselves. Maybe it gets so grim that we step up our boundaries or our ability to assert ourselves, our capacity to say, that is not what I need or want right now. And to do so, not in a blind place of rage, panic, desperation, but to actually have that fire of self-conviction come through in us to be able to say, no, these are my needs. I need to be able to nurture myself in my own life right now. And therefore, these certain things need to change. So that place of, as we were talking about before, those habitual energy fields, that fight, flight, freeze, that non-conscious way of living. We know from neuroscience that apparently, and I'm not necessarily believing this one, Dawn, but apparently most people go through their day for 96% of the time living through their subconscious, which means only 4%, which I think works out to about 40 or 50 minutes, of your day, are you living consciously? Are you having any kind of active choice in? Now, perhaps there is truth in that for some of us some days. But if that is the case, I would feel very unhopeful about our capacity to change things in these next 40, 50 years that we so need to be able to change things. I think far more there is a greater level of consciousness that is coming forward. The discussions are different. This discussion is different now than it would have been 20 years ago, not just because we've grown in these last 20 years, but that this level of conversation, what is a soul, what's reincarnation, what's energy, just as a human collective in the mainstream societies, we weren't in a position to be open to. So all the time we're suddenly fast tracking, aren't we? Because that human collective of consciousness is moving at a very, very different place now. And I believe, and some people, this would be one step too far, and other people will be totally fine with, I believe that there are a lot of non-human intelligences, and those non-human intelligences in this world, so we can talk about that as a place of kind of a cosmic love or a cosmic wisdom. We can talk about that as the intelligence from the animal realm, the intelligence from the natural realm, the intelligence from the mineral realm, that all of these intelligences are actually supporting this big shift in consciousness, which is affecting human consciousness. So I think of the cosmos as continually emerging. It's not static, it's not fixed, just as I or you or everyone else is not static or fixed. We're always emerging, and we're emerging together. And that then I feel deeply hopeful. And every time one of us can take that little stretch of our own courage, that little place of actually choosing life, choose life for yourself, choose life for life, choose life for the cosmos. Every time we take that step, we're co-creating a different future. So that's living that big life. That for me is what. And I think there's one question, and I kind of beginning to think it's the most important question I know at the time. And it really comes into that. And it's the question of, what do I need to be me? Another way of saying it is, what do I need to nurture myself? And I'm not talking from that mainstream perspective of, oh, I need a bigger car, or I need some different nail color, or I need a better job. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that deeper level. What do I need today to be me? The me that sings to you in your dreams, the me that sings and speaks and whispers of this immense world wisdom that you always have pulsing, flowing through you. How do you bring that you into the world? Because that you is magnificent, and that you is the you that changes the world for all of us. When we are all in that place, our collective wisdom and collective empowerment will make it a very, very different world for us and our children and our grandchildren and.
And 7 generations on.
Mm-hmm.
That really touched me when you said that 7 generations piece. That really, like, I could feel everything just expand because it really resonates. That's probably how I try to live when I think about it. I think I don't think about how is this going to impact me. I think how is this going to impact everyone, and what will that look like going forwards? That's probably one of my core beliefs. And I really like when you asked the question, what do I need? The first thing that came to my mind was space.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question came up for me, well, why don't I always give myself that space? And then I could feel my energy feel constrict because there's some fear around, it's not okay to, you know, not be busy or whatever nonsense I've told myself over the years. I think that's a brilliant question. I really hope our listeners take it away and take some time to ponder on it.
I think what you bring forward there, Dawn, is so, so essential, isn't it? For me, curiosity is one of the biggest healers in our energy system and in our lives. When we can be curious about things, so exactly like you were, you found the question and you answered yourself, and then you said space, and then you got the next step curious and you said, oh, but why don't I give myself that? And sure, you felt that restriction. But now let's say, if we say the next step of curious is, okay, well, how do I give it to myself a bit more today? Just start with today. Every day, start with today. How do I give it to myself a bit more today? Well, okay. So now your consciousness and your energy is aligned to that concept of the benefit of space. And then magic happens. That's where this co-creativity comes in. Instead of you coming off this chat now and thinking, oh, okay, now I've got to do this and this and this, maybe you just think, space, you know? Yeah, I can create time to go and have a 20-minute wander through the park or along the road and just breathe a little bit and then come back. And suddenly, everything is different, isn't it? So I love that. And yes, nurture that space. I think that's true for all of us. Energy needs space because that's where the healing occurs. That's where the capacity for those old limiting patterns begin to dissolve. Your energy is always looking for balance, always looking for health. You talked about that beautiful way you work as a cranial sacral therapist with being able to, now what was your words, mine would be activate that template of health. What did you say? Return.
I might have said palpate, but generally I'm just listening.
Yeah, orientate, but you said like returning,
orientate back to health.
Exactly, orientate back to health. It's like that activation of that amazing blueprint that every single human being has, coded in our cells, coded in the space between our cells, that we can be that biggest part of our own life.
Well, Prince, it's been such an interesting conversation. We'll need to do it again.
I'd love that, Dawn.
There's more questions. Tell our listeners, where can they purchase your book?
Well, what I would love you to do as a listener is purchase it from an ethical place to buy it from. If you do a Google search, there's many, many places. And also, I've just released an audio book. So that's also available across all platforms. We have gone with Amazon as well, because we needed to for various algorithms. And if you feel in resonance with Amazon, then of course that's an option. But if you don't, then please look to support your local or at least ethical book providers. There's so many of them around.
Yeah. So Prune's book, Your Radiant Soul, Understanding Your Energy to Transform Your World, is out now. You can get it. It's wonderful. It's a book that you can dip in and out of. You don't have to sit and read the whole thing. Chapters are really easy to follow, and there's loads of wonderful, beautiful illustrations as well, which I think you really love. And I love some of your images of the Matrix. I've seen them and felt them in my head before, so it felt really, really familiar to witness it on the page.
That's brilliant. That's why we I worked with two different illustrators for 2 years to create the images of what I see, because what I've learned is that when other people have those images, they begin to really perceive in a different way themselves, because it's all here. It's all here. We just need to remember it.
Yeah, exactly. Remember what we've been taught to forget.
Totally. Love that phrase.
Thank
All
you.
right, Dawn.
Thank you so much, Prune, for your time, and thank you for listening. Please do be very, very kind and leave a lovely review for us. Hit the subscribe button and share with your friends. This podcast has no adverts and is not paid any money for a reason, because it's here as service to the community. So please help me to grow our audience by making those little few minutes to just leave a little review or something. Thank you for listening. Have a beautiful day, and please take care of your energy.